could this be the beginning of an Everton? I, if they don't find success, what happens here?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, patrons. Happy Tuesday. Money in football day. James, how are we doing?
I'm all right, mate. You?
Better than yesterday, I would say. Better than yesterday.
What happened yesterday?
No, you know, it was closer to our teams getting defeated. So as every day passes, you feel a little bit better.
If you want. Till we walk into Man City Thursday night, maybe.
Today we're talking, it's a Money in Football show, James. And we're talking about Chelsea because they are a hot topic, having recently
splurged.
Stolen the Mudryk deal from Arsenal, would you say? Just stepped in at the last minute and paid a huge fee. Mihailo Mudryk? How do you pronounce his first name?
Mihailo, I think. Mudryk.
Yeah. Having already spent a large amount of money since Todd Boehly and his Clearwater Consortium, Capital Consortium have taken over. Obviously, under Abramovich, Chelsea were known for big spending, but it's a very different business model when it's a single individual wealthy owner. And when you get these American institutions coming in, they don't always treat Premier League football clubs in the same way. We've seen it with Liverpool, and they don't spend particularly big. The Glazers have spent big, but also taken a lot of money out along the way as well, although they're not really investors as much as they are a family that own the football club. But we've seen other clubs where it hasn't worked out particularly well in terms of Randy Lerner. I think Arsenal fans right now probably in a good space, but they haven't particularly been fans of Stan Kroenke. Oh,
that's gone quiet, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder why.
So you don't know where it's going to go, but Todd Boehly obviously came in, took over from Abramovich. We didn't know what direction this was going to go in, but I don't think anybody predicted that they'd quite spend this much money.
Can we go back a step? Why is it different to an individual having a football club? You said it was different. Why is it different?
Because an individual might do it for passion. So what I'm saying is Abramovich was a Chelsea fan. He loved football and he loved the football club, and it was his own money. Clearwater Capital, who are the investors in Chelsea, who've bought the people that have bought Chelsea Football Club, is made up of multiple people. And Todd Boehly is a minority shareholder in that organization. He just happens to be the public face of. But there are a number of different...
A little bit like Daniel Levy. He's just kind of like
exactly.
The face at the front.
Yeah.
Okay.
A funny story on Daniel Levy. Maybe I'll tell you in a second.
Can we not?
It's not even... It's our friend's expression oozing. But...
I'll go and fuck it.
Exactly. So there's a number of wealthy billionaires from America that make up the consortium. Obviously, the consortium owns shares in the Dodgers and Rams and whatever else they've got shares in. So an institution is going to be looking for a return on investment, and this is all other people's money. They haven't bought the football club because they're all Chelsea fans. There are certain people involved on the board of directors and as part of the management team who are Chelsea fans, but that's not who has put the bulk of the money in. So if you look at it, the ownership is majority investors, minority fans. The management is majority fans. But when you've got a single individual owner, owner-investor, they can make decisions that they want to without having to worry about a return on investment. Whereas these guys will have that element to their ownership as well.
They'll be looking for a return on this, is what you're saying. Even if it's selling the football club for 10 billion.
Yeah, and making a profit. Like they're looking at it with a financial, through a financial lens, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask a question about the Abramovich write-off?
Yeah.
Is that potentially a part of this?
Nah.
Spending?
No.
Can they put that money, i.e. are they well under what would be a general cap for a year's worth of spending because they've had a dump of $1.5 billion?
No.
Or
I don't think that's not possible. It was a personal loan to himself, right? So when they bought the football club, that would have been factored into the price of the football club that they bought. So
okay.
They would, if he wanted that money back, all they would have had to do is pay more for the football club to cover the cost of that debt. So it's been factored in to the price of the football club when they bought it. Yeah, yeah. And it's not like you can say, oh, we don't have to pay back that $1.5 billion, so we've got $1.5 billion extra in revenue. No, it doesn't
work. But we still believe he never saw that money, right? Just to clarify.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He said he was writing it off, and he has written that off. Yeah.
Okay, so that's not a part, just to clarify, that's not a part of any accounting now for Chelsea. No. You're saying that was part of the Bolly company.
Correct.
Purchase price. Okay, fine. Are Chelsea in danger here of doing an Everton?
No. Where... You asked me this question on the pod yesterday. Like, could they run out of money? Or was it on yesterday? It was in the Q&A we talked about.
Probably,
it.
Yeah.
Where you're like, could this go tits up? And of course it could, right? Because
Everton, actually, I just briefly on that, Everton obviously mentioned the comparisons with Villa, but actually it's a little bit like, it's also a combination of what happened to Leeds at the start of the noughties, in the sense they can't spend no money. The only difference is they haven't been asset stripped of all these players because the players are too crap. Leeds bought great players and had to sell them all. Everton just bought crap and can't sell it. Sorry.
Yeah. The question of could it implode? I think the reason it could implode is because spending money on players doesn't translate to success on the pitch. So they are banking on revenue growing and success on the pitch driving up revenue. So Champions League money coming in and so on and so on. If that doesn't happen, the downside isn't that they're boom and bust, like a Derby or one of these championship clubs that bet big, and if they don't make it, they're fucked. Chelsea aren't in that situation, in my opinion. They can bet big, but relative to the amount of money that they have, it's going to be okay. So, I mean, the guys that own Chelsea are fucking rich, mate. Okay. Or the organization that owns Chelsea is really fucking rich. So Clearwater Capital have... assets, and this is a little while ago, but they have assets in the region of $46 billion
okay, in assets. That's more than Abramovich, isn't it?
Yeah, way more. Way more. And that could be shares in sports clubs and whatever else. But the bottom line being, look, what have they spent? $500 million? All right.
Well,
and
in terms of transfer spending across the two windows so far, in brackets, basically $400 million roughly.
Yeah,
pounds.
Yeah, $500 million. So that's a lot, but also they've spent a lot in a short period of time. You don't anticipate that level of spending ongoing. They will make money from player sales. Yeah. So it's not net $400 million, and they can afford it. They can afford it. So they will have access to way more money if they need it. So I'm not worried that they're going to go bust. Like, it could be shit for them because they might be rubbish on field.
But Everton, if you take Everton, just sorry to, it seems weird comparing the two teams at the moment, but Everton aren't in a financial predicament where the football club's going to die. Everton are in a position where they can't spend any money, basically, or at least are restricted because of the amount of money that they've spent previously. We've kind of done the joke about the amount they put on COVID losses being like double similar clubs of their size within the Premier League and stuff. We think to potentially get round FFP and stuff. So for them, is a restriction of FFP. So what a lot of the listeners are going to be going is, right, okay, spent $400 million, the guys can afford it. That's all great. But I know there's an FFP here line. So
yeah.
Are they not going to cross it?
No. I mean, FFP is changing as well. We should differentiate between Premier League FFP and UEFA FFP. So the Premier League FFP in its purest form is that you're allowed to lose £35 million per season over an average three-year season, so £105 million. Yeah. That kind of got skew with because of COVID, and suddenly losses were in excess, so then they were allowed to bring different bits of revenue in and out. Chelsea also, remember, they had a window transfer ban where they didn't spend any money. They also made a lot of money from winning the Champions League. I mean, that's like 120 million in prize money, give or take or something, just for winning the Champions League. Some of the players that they've sold, sometimes we don't even think about, but when you add it up, they're making a fair chunk of change. Like Kurt Zouma, what was he to us? 30 million. Tammy Abraham, Tomori, all these 20s and 30s.
Mark Gaye.
Yeah, they add up.
Timo Liveramento, they all add up.
Yeah, before you know, they do add up. So they've made quite a bit of money from that as well. So overall, over that time period, they haven't fallen foul, technically, of the Premier League's 105 million over an average 3 years losses because of COVID. Like, had the COVID situation not been there, that might be a different situation, but they're allowed to add extra losses because of that. They might be either side of what's, they're borderline. It's not like they're very clear of FFP. They're give or take in and around that 105 million, but they're not like 200 million or 300 million where the likes of Everton are, which is particularly bad. And Everton don't make the money that Chelsea do from player sales, mate. Factory
Chelsea are a monster in player sales, just for clarity. There's no point doing the numbers, but essentially way, and I mean way more than any other club in the Premier League in terms of money made from player sales over the last 3 years or so. Exactly what we said. Loads of young kids even. They didn't know about him. Yeah, he left for like 15, 20 million or so and only had five appearances or something. Mm. That's because their academy has been fantastic for a really long time now. Some like Reece James obviously make it through. The majority go and play for Palaces or they go back into Europe or something. And the average sale with these guys is probably sort of 15, 20 million or so. And there's a lot of them.
Yeah. And the other thing is like you've got other situations where players come to the end of their contracts, the likes of Rudiger or what have you. Now, if a player is towards the end of his contract, you might get less money, because they might have less value. But the amount of that money that goes onto your P&L is greater because you've amortized them. So let's give it a round number, right? Let's say Raheem Sterling is 50 million, 5-year contract. So you're going to spread it 10 million a year.
Yeah.
If they sold him the next year for 60 million, the upside is 10 million profit plus they've only depreciated him down to 40 million, 10 million a year. So the 50's gone to 40, but they've sold him for 60. So they've made 20 million, right?
That's because what they've already paid his wages for 2 years or?
No. As in they bought him for 50, but they haven't bought him for 50. They're buying him 10 million a year.
I understand that.
So now in year two, technically they've written off 10 million. So in theory, he's cost them 40, but they're selling for 60. That's 20 million difference. But take Rudiger, same scenario. They buy him for 50. By the time they get to year five, he's written down to like 10 million only because it's gone down. They might sell him for 40 million. There's more money there. So at the end of a contract, they've written off the transfer fee. So everything they get back in is profit. Whereas earlier in the contract, they have to still factor in, we owe this much money for that player.
But if Rudiger's a great example, he's obviously gone to Real Madrid, right? So Rudiger's out at the end of his contract. Have Chelsea put anything to do with Rudiger as part of profit?
No, they won't have because he left for free. But I'm talking about if they take a lower transfer fee. But where that does help is they've got his wages gone. And there were a number of players like Danny Drinkwater and a few others that were there that were on big wages that have moved on. That's helped their financial fair play numbers from a P&L point of view. We talked about this FFP that people, how are they getting around it? So the losses is one thing. The other thing that people need to be aware of is the change in UEFA's FFP that kicks in from next season.
Okay.
And we don't quite know how that's going to impact. So the rules are now on a sliding scale that there's a fixed amount of your revenue that you are allowed to spend on player wages, agents' fees, and net transfer spend. And next season is 90%, then it drops to 80%, then it drops to 70%.
And then it stays there.
Yeah. Loads of clubs are way above that. I mean, in the Premier League, it's between 90 and 100% for a lot. Outside of the Premier League in Europe, where their revenues, we have to remember, are a lot lower than ours, are well in excess of 100% of their revenues on those three things.
I think, I want to say Tottenham around about 60, I think.
Oh, really?
But that's rare, I think.
Yeah. I mean, getting to 70 for a lot of clubs is going to be quite hard. And remember, like, the Premier League makes twice as much from TV as Germany, Italy, Spain. It makes four times as much in TV as France, broadcasting rights. That's a monster, mate. So with that in mind, there's no surprise that they want to front load all of this spending, because it's going to get harder in the next 3 years for them to want to spend money. So I think that's part of it.
Here's the thing, and this is, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that what I found from what I looked at was basically Chelsea can go on this mad splurge right now. It's not a problem in the sense of even meeting the Premier League. I think people look at that logic and go, you spent 400 million. How do you stay within the Premier League for 3 years? Well, one of those is amortization, which we'll talk about in a sec, I'm sure. But also the leveling out of player trading, factor in they had that year where, as you said, they were restricted, they didn't buy any players, yada, yada, yada.
And the Champions League, mate, 120 million for winning the Champions League.
Yeah. So
you don't have that. Arsenal don't have that. That's a lot of money.
Ah, yeah. Here's the thing, though, right? So Chelsea got to the quarterfinals last year and lost to Real Madrid. And I think last year they made about 85 million. Mm-hmm. Still a lot of money. Chelsea this year might not qualify for Europe at all. They might go on a run and finish top four. But I think even the Chelsea fans listening to this right now go, I don't think that's going to happen, James. So that's a shortfall. Remember, they're in the Champions League this year. Right. So what I understand is from my research is that actually in terms of kind of cash reserves, because of money they made, they were in a position where they could go and spend a fuck ton of money and it wouldn't be an FFP problem now. What I don't understand is fast forward 3 years from now. They've spent this 400 million. Let's just say they don't qualify for European football for the next 3 years. They don't make the revenue in terms of in-stadium match day that the rest of the big six do, maybe comparable to Man City, maybe. But certainly in terms of like United and Tottenham, they're lagging way behind, for example. So if they haven't got that kind of, let's say Champions League quarterfinal was par, right? 85 million. If you're removing that suddenly and have just spent this 400 million, wham's in 3 years. Say this is the beginning of the three-year cycle. What happens in 3 years' time if Chelsea are no longer a Champions League football team?
Yeah,
that's what I want to know.
Their spending is going to be hugely restricted.
But that's where, to come full circle, looking at it and going, could this be the beginning of an Everton? I.e., if they don't find success, what happens here?
What I don't have in front of me, though, is the squad list. Because
for what?
For Everton. Like, they're all the players they got on the roster. Because the reality is, for Champions League and for Premier League, you are allowed to name 25 players in your squad.
I don't know. Chelsea would be named about 45, wouldn't they?
You're only allowed 25. So what are you going to do with the rest? You're not going to just leave them there as... So they will be selling players and moving players on. There's no point in buying loads. They've bought young players. Some of the players they've bought, yeah, are a little older in Koulibaly. But then if you look at the likes of Mudryk that they've just bought, João Felix, if he does join, is young. Wesley Fofana, young.
João Felix is a loan for reported 9 million. Yeah, although I read somewhere else today, 15 million.
They may buy him, right? But
There's no obligation. They reckon that he part of the loan, Suj, he signed a new contract with Atletico.
To increase his value.
Now that, yeah, it could be that it's part of that. But it's believed that he's fallen out massively with Simeone, and Simeone might go at the end of the season. And to be honest, in any case, if Chelsea do want to go and buy João Felix, I'm guessing what they're valuing him at, what, 9 million for 6 months, hypothetically, let's say half a football season. So what, 18 million a year? So if they want to give him a 6-year contract, what is it, 100 and 5 million or so?
It's crazy money.
When? Just to touch on a few players here, for example. In fact, no, let's come back to players. But Koulibaly's a good example of a player you mentioned, right? 31 years old, give him a 4-year contract. Right, already, that's been a failure. It's been a failure. And interestingly, I read an article this morning where 442, really important publication that's valued quite highly, they rated 11 months ago Koulibaly the best player in Serie A. But it's gone badly to the extent you'd say, right, if they decided to cut their losses, who buys him?
Yep.
They'll end up doing what they've done with Lukaku. They'll loan him.
Sure.
That's where it's at. Another example, Raheem Sterling. Yeah. Not that age. They bought Raheem Sterling for 50 million or so, right? They've bought in all these left wingers. We'll talk about some of the names in a bit. If they decide, right, fuck it, Raheem Sterling's not right for us, let's get rid of him in the summer, where's he going? And Raheem Sterling is an extremely good footballer, but who is going to take Raheem Sterling on the wages he's on, etc.? Where does Raheem Sterling go?
I think they have made a calculated risk that they're willing to lose that money, drip feed that money out through P&L on an annual basis.
But if they don't have Champions League football over the next 3 years, or even, let's say, European football full stop, then what's that? You're running down a dangerous alley here, I think.
I don't know if I can give you, I don't know if this analogy is helpful. I'm trying to think, it's not necessarily, okay. I owned the car, James. I bought a car and I borrowed money to buy the car. So I bought the car on finance. This was 2 years ago and it was, money was particularly cheap. I think my loan was like 2% or 2.9% or something like that. So I owed $6,000 on this car. And over the course of the next 2 years that I had to pay the loan back on the car, I think it was costing me £200 a month. And the interest over 2 years was about £350. So it's not a lot of interest on $6,000 over 2 years that I've got to pay back on this loan, right? The car is there, it's fine. Imagine they've done this with a player. They own a player and they owe money on this player. And I know now my cost of owning that car is £200 a month for the next 3 years. Fine, I've got to pay that money back. If I crash the car into a brick wall and it's written off, forget the insurance, I'm still paying back £200 a month. I can afford that loan repayment, whether the car is there or not, whether the player is there or not. I sold the car and I got back the money and I had $6,000 actually in cash to pay the loan back, but I decided not to because I decided to keep the money in the bank and I'll pay that £350 interest because I'd rather have the cash just in case. I want to use it for something else because I can still afford the £200 a month on the loan repayments if I didn't have that cash. So they've bought Sterling and their pay is costing them wages plus amortization of the transfer fee.
Yep.
And if it fails and goes to, it will never go to zero. So it may go to half. Whatever the difference is, they've made the calculation that they'll still drip feed that cost out. You know how certain clubs are like Barcelona and Coutinho or that kind of thing where they're still forever, it seems to be forever paying bits of it.
Yeah.
They've made the calculation that if it goes bad and down in value, we can afford to still pay it. Of course, it impairs their ability to get someone new in or what they might be able to offer elsewhere. But there are, this is an interesting gamble that they've taken, I think, to buy a lot of young players on a lot of long contracts. Because assume the opposite happens, right? They do really well. Suddenly they've got Cucurella, Fofana, Badiashile, Mudryk. And they're, in 2 years from now, they're all on, let's say they all were on 7-year contracts, for argument's sake. 2 years from now, they're winning the Premier League. And all of these players come back and say, well, I want an extension on my contract, please. I want more money. They can turn around and be like, fuck you, mate. You got 5 years. So we have no obligation to pay you any more. Just sit there. Tough shit.
Yeah. I mean, the caveat to that, mate, like we know that unhappy footballers doesn't create a good environment.
I really think there's an interesting dynamic here between player power and club power. Like part of what they're trying to do, I think, with these long contracts is the balance of power. Like, if I've got you on an 8.5-year contract, you better shut the fuck up and do what you're asked to do. You know,
it goes the other way, right? So,
oh yeah,
let's take Mudryk as an example.
If he's shit, they're going to pay him for a long time.
Well, I 8.5-year contract is obviously eye watering. Listen, having look, if you look at him on YouTube, it's the usual. He looks like he's going to be the best player in the world, let me assure you. I'm going to do a bit of a digger deeper for the Talking Tactics tomorrow to actually see if what he is really as a player. But he, do you know what? On YouTube, he reminds me of a little bit. It's a little bit like Haaland,
okay,
with skill in terms of like these long flowing hair and his power and he runs and stuff. And he could be an absolutely brilliant player. What's interesting about it is as little as last summer, it wasn't the starter for Ukraine. When Ukraine lost to, when they beat Scotland in the playoff and they lost to Wales, it wasn't even a starter. So between a 6 months rise, he's gone from not starting to Ukraine to going to Chelsea for, what are we saying, 85, 90 million, roughly, whatever. It's a massive jump. Now, I've seen a jump like this before where Gareth Bale was reportedly going to be kind of let go by Tottenham for 5 million at the beginning of 2010. And I can assure you by the end of it, he was worth 10 times that. So I'm not saying a player can't improve at his sort of age, particularly dramatically. I've seen it happen with Gareth. But what happens if this boy gets a couple of really bad hamstring injuries, starts suffering reoccurrences badly, like Reece James is obviously suffering injuries, and you're stuck with that? And it literally, with someone like Mudryk, it's only literally going to take one bad season and you are potentially stuck with that player for what, 7.5 years? Or you're just constantly loaning him out. And Chelsea fans, the older ones, sorry, Gary, will remember Winston Bogard, who you joked about yesterday and stuff like that, just literally sitting there and ripping the club. And they've obviously very recently had Danny Drinkwater as well. Which, do you know what? A club like Chelsea can afford the odd one like this. But the reality is with these contracts, it's just amortization manipulation. And it feels a little bit to me like a Barcelona-Liverpool. Because that's beyond 8.5 year contract for something. All right, let me put it this way to you. You mentioned cars, right? And I don't know a lot about cars because I don't drive, right? But if you bought a car for 8.5 years and had to keep paying the monthly installments for 8.5 years and it broke down after a year and you couldn't do fuck all with it and you had to keep paying it for the next 7.5 years, how would you feel?
Annoying. But I've done the maths that I can afford it. That's but if the car, if I wrote the car off, even worse, James, is what I'm saying. If it drove into a brick wall and I got no insurance for it and I still had to pay my 200 quid a month, I can afford it. Fine. And they've made that calculation.
They can afford it now.
But it stops me spending, it stops me spending 200 quid on something else.
There's no question. There's no question, because the big question is, how are Chelsea doing it, right? Essentially, the business they've done over the last 3 years and a little bit before, it's nothing to do with Abramovich, as you've clarified, Serge. The business model over the last 3 years, forget debt, you're allowed a certain amount, the amortization, etc., yada, 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 they can do all this. Because the 400 million is not, oh my God, it's 400 million into 1 year of accounts. It's not. Mudryk at 85 million is being split 8.5 times, isn't it? What even is that? I don't know, 10.3 million a year over the length of his contract or something. That's how they're doing it. The concern for me is that you're getting all these players in now, sort of 8.5 year contracts. Presumably, they're going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
So when you get to the end of the 3 year cycle, and you've already said FFP, a lot of people think it's dead. Actually, it's beginning to sound like it's going to get tighter to me.
There's more elements to it, for sure.
If we get 3 years down the line, like I said, and Chelsea have had no European football, and they've got all these fuck-off salaries, what's happening?
Yeah.
They're in Everton mode, aren't they? When Everton bought the players that they bought, Everton didn't think with the players that they were buying, you know, Alex Iwobi's and stuff like this, they didn't think there's going to be no resale value in these players and they won't be able to move any of them on. They probably thought we'd buy all these players at 20 million and in 3-4 years' time, they're all going to be worth 40 or 50 million. Now, in that case, next to none of them other than Richarlison have worked out from that perspective.
The revenue is where I think this is interesting. So the feeling with Todd Boehly and the group is that there's a big upside for Chelsea in terms of revenue. America is a big market that hasn't been maximized. The fan engagement and monetizing the millions of fans around the world that don't spend any money with the club is still a big upside potential. And that's how they will counteract this. Now, Chelsea's biggest revenue years, 18, 19, the couple of years before the pandemic, they were still trophy winning and doing right at that kind of time, was 400, just south of 450 million. That's the peak that they tapped out at. They reckon the billion is achievable, but the biggest revenue ever from a Premier League football club in any season was Manchester United the year before COVID. They got to 630, just under, 627.
I think City are above United now, aren't they?
They are in the last couple of years. This is going back a bit. But yeah. City, a couple of years ago, hit 570. So let's
say City are claiming.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
But yeah, and they've had to, they've had to cook the books to get to that 650 million in revenue. And we know that Manchester United are a commercial machine. Like, if they can make money out of it, they're making money out of it. They've got sponsors for everything. Their brand is global. I don't think there's a single country that they don't touch. And if they're playing fucking Accrington Stanley on a Wednesday night, they'd get TV viewing and they'd be put on the box. So if and that is 650 to 700 million. So and that's huge. How are Chelsea going to... And that's 75,000 at Old Trafford or however fuck many it holds. It's not 41,000 at Stamford Bridge. I don't see where Chelsea are going to make that extra 200 to 300 million in revenue through the fans to get to the levels of Manchester United and artificial Manchester City numbers. I don't see the upside in revenue, James. Like, I do feel like for football clubs, it's plateau. It's still going to go up, but it's not going to go up in step change leap amounts. It's going to go up 5%, 8% a year. 1 year it might go down. And you take out the European football money.
When are they targeting this buy? And where have you just seen this?
This was an interview he did a couple of years ago where he was talking about when he wanted to get involved.
Oh, so before he owned Chelsea?
Yeah. And then after they took over Chelsea, he hasn't been specific. But people that know Todd Boehly and people that are in the inner circle there have mentioned that they think they can get the club up to bigger revenue numbers. Let's take the billion number out of the equation. Even getting up to 650 million is going to be difficult. So difficult, unless they redevelop the stadium. And you know from experience, that's $1.5 billion in expenditure now. You built your stadium before COVID. I tell you what, mate, the price of building materials has gone up dramatically since then.
And there's a bigger problem for Chelsea in terms of that Chelsea have this. I really wish I'd looked into this before this podcast now, but they've got the pitch owners agreement, haven't they? The Chelsea pitch owners or something, where the club's basically got to stay at Stamford Bridge in essence, as it stands. The problem is, and you can go on Google or whomever, and you will find clear plans for a Chelsea rebuild stadium. Done. And you'll notice that part of it is, it's angled a little bit lopsided in certain places and stuff, but get capacity up to 60,000. That was put in place a long time ago. In fact, when my team went to Wembley, which was originally meant to be a year, we thought that it was going forward quickly at Stamford Bridge to the extent that Chelsea were probably going to have to go and use Wembley 2 years later. We started using Wembley in 2017. So we thought that Chelsea might have demolished Stamford Bridge by 2019 then. It's now 2023 and the plans are further away than they were then. One of the major reasons for that is the underground runs directly underneath the football stadium. So it's not sensible to just knock it down and restart and stuff. There's rumours they'd have to shut the district line for a couple of years and stuff like that. That's not going to happen.
No.
So there's complications for a rebuild for Chelsea, either at a different location. And forgive me, I'm sure Gary or other Chelsea fans, if they think a move outside of Fulham is possible. But rebuilding where they are to get it up to the 60-odd thousand or so, it's not going to be easy.
No,
not going to be easy. And meanwhile, everybody else, Liverpool are going up in capacity. City can put another end behind one of their goals. United are thinking of potentially doing a new stadium. That also has its problems. But if they did, it would be fucking ginormous, wouldn't it? You could imagine.
Yep.
The Emirates is fairly new. and everybody knows about my club stadium, right? And what it's making is madness.
And we got a free one as well. Don't forget us. We got a free 60,000 seat.
What Tottenham are making on a match day compared to Chelsea is actually becoming a madness. And consider where Chelsea is as well. Mm. Chelsea should always be in a position really where they're charging the most for ticket prices because of where it is and stuff. So there's complications in terms of if they think that's a revenue stream. I wouldn't mind betting that Chelsea are still playing at Stamford Bridge in the stadium as it is in 5 years.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think these guys that have come in, they have money.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I'm not questioning it, mate.
Yeah, so I think they have enough money to deliver what they want to deliver. There's just a difference in timescales. So someone, the more money you have, the longer, more patient you're able to be. If I was investing £1 billion in Chelsea, I'd need a return in 3 or 4 years because I ain't got no other money. These guys have so much money that they might look at it as a 10, 15 year project and say, fuck it. We're going to spend $4 or $5 billion on the club now, but we know in 15 years we'll get $15 billion for it.
Do you think Chelsea will keep spending? I don't necessarily mean the next week or...
I think it's going to slow down. I think they know what's coming around the corner with this 90, 80, 70%, which is why they're going a bit hard now while they can with their previous reserves. Because when you layer in that 90% of your revenue, including net transfers and agents fees, your profit doesn't matter if it's still going to take you over that 90%. So I think they're getting their spending out and done now. Yeah, they will continue.
So why is everyone else not doing that now?
Maybe they don't have the spending power, mate. You might not have the money.
Not with that, really.
You might not have the money. Manchester United want to sell the club. They ain't going to be splashing the cash. You're still paying for a stadium and your owners are particularly tight.
Yeah, but that doesn't come off the P&L and stuff. So
what, the stadium?
I realise my guys who run my football club can be a little bit reluctant in terms of spending the money.
Cash flow and P&L are two different things. You might be making a profit, but you might have no money.
We're not in a position where we don't have money, but I get your point.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one to follow, but I'm not doomsday. Like, all that will happen was Chelsea will just be a bit shit on the pitch for a little while and not have enough money to particularly upgrade their playing staff. But then they've always got young players coming through. And that's one of the things that pains me the most is
I think
young players not getting an opportunity.
To be honest, like, if Chelsea can spend the money, right? It's fine. To be honest, I think the key takeaway is, for those who've been questioning, are Chelsea breaking any rules here right now? No. I think there's potential for a problem, potentially. If they finish 10th for the next 3 years or so, they're running into a problem, which will mean they'll have to be mass sales and they'll be restricted. But exactly what Suj says, they'll have great players through the academy and stuff. You're not in a position of Chelsea going down or anything like that. No. My issue is, I think, and a lot of people's issue is where this money's actually being spent in the sense of the playing personnel, which must be touched on because, I mean, we've mentioned all three players, for example, already, but Sterling, Mudryk and Nkunku, they're all getting in the team. And you've just, I mean, Nkunku's done. He's coming next summer.
67 million or something, 61
so,
million.
I mean, like I said, Mudryk might go on and become the best left winger in the world. But are they going to get all these players in the team along with what else they've got? He just feels a little bit scattergun at the moment. And you know what? If they've got the money and gone, yeah, this will solve the problem. We've got too many injuries. Fine, that's their choice. They may believe they can sell Raheem Sterling in the summer, get some money back, whatever. You know, Nkunku is going to play on the right. They'll move Mudryk to the other side like Tottenham did with Bale, for example. I don't know, right? But there is an element of it, I think, which... he's very hypocritical against the managerial appointment. The manager was appointed as a long... that's what I keep hearing from Chelsea. Long-term projects. I've been defending Potter recently, saying, look, results terrible, but we know it's a long-term vision. That's what we keep saying about Chelsea and Potter. Long-term vision. They're not going for success now. They brought him in because they've got a long-term vision of what this wants to be. But then the transfer market activity is completely fucking at odds against the manager that they brought in. And that's the biggest thing of all, actually, to relate it back to football, that I don't understand.
I need to understand a little bit more, and Chelsea fans and Gary and co asking when you're next on. So Todd Bowley stepped down as interim sporting director.
He's got other guys in now. Yeah.
And I think they are working with Graham Potter.
I'm not saying that he's not got a say, but to be honest with you, if you say to a football manager, whether he's one who wants to develop like a Potter or he's like a Conte who needs success yesterday, do you know what? We've agreed a deal for £85 million for one of the best young wingers on the planet. Do you want him? He's not going to say no. What do you always say about West Ham? It's not my money.
No, exactly that.
Crack on. Let him do it. Let's be honest. To be honest, he probably knows he's potentially got a short shelf life. As if he's going to be in a position where they say to him, oh yeah, we've got this for you. Do you want it or not? Imagine if he says no. Maybe he gets sacked if he says no. I don't know. Maybe he's gone to them and said, you've got to get me £100 million winger because I haven't fucking got enough already, or I can't wait for Nkunku. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's probably not the latter.
It's unlikely because we've seen what he did at Brighton and really found some gems. So I think it's unlikely, but let's see. Should I tell you about Expression Zuzin? It made me laugh.
Oh, go on, quick.
Pissed myself the other day. So he was on a rant on after the North London derby, and it was particularly aimed at the owners, right? Daniel Levy, what did he call him? Bald something or other looking kind of fella. And then he was moaning about how the owners are never there, and he doesn't even know who the fuck they are. And he's like, hey guys, if I saw Joe Lewis on the street, I wouldn't know what he looks like or who the hell he is. Who is this Joe Lewis? If I saw Enoch on the street, I wouldn't know who he is or what he looks like. I was like, I'm pretty sure Enoch is not a person and is an investment company organization, mate.
I reckon he probably knew that. I like to think he did.
It was either on the show that he does with that Robbie, or it was on his other show. So he popped up and he was like moaning about the fact that if he saw Enoch on the street, he wouldn't know what he looks like.
You love him, don't you? Old
Oozie. Oh, yeah. He's a poet, James. His way with words is fantastic. His football commentary analysis.
Moving on.
Is nothing to be listened to. But some of the names that he comes out for people are absolutely fantastic. I need to think of some, catch up with some that he popped out on the weekend. But yeah.
Yeah. If you want to watch shit analysis of Chelsea, was it Rory Jennings from. What's your man's talk? Geordie,
kickoff.
The kickoff. Yeah. He's the odd Chelsea one around at the moment.
He is. He will never be able to live down that. Haaland is going to be the Haaland. He's just never going to be able to live it down.
So. What did he say? If he gets 15 goals, it'll be a good season. He said, wasn't it?
Yes, indeed.
Anyway, moving on. Proper whinging tomorrow. Chelsea fans listening, and seriousness, do feedback, because neither me or such a professing to be 100% accurate on all the information and some of the opinions, particularly for me around the stadium stuff. So if that's different, I'd be keen to get your opinions. And obviously, chat away in the Chelsea channel later, where we'll post the link for this and that.
Fantastic. Patrons, make sure you're looking after yourselves. Tottenham tomorrow, as James said. Look forward to it. It'll be Rantzeroni. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Cue music, please, man child. Messi.